episode of Routes Through Pokemon Adventures. I'm Shaylock.
And I'm Ruby.
And together we are a father and daughter duo journeying through the mainline series of Pokemon video games, the Pokemon anime, and the Pokemon Adventures manga. And this week, there will be no manga, as we have a whole bunch of episodes to try to get us to Ecruteak City, and so we will be covering 7 episodes of the anime. But before we get started in that, let's catch up on what's going on in our lives right now. So, for you listeners, this one is being recorded a little out of order because somebody had to get sick the last time we were going to record.
Yeah, come on, Daddy.
It was not me.
This was.
And, well, you know what?
What?
A few episodes back, it was a little while ago now, we had an argument, two throughout the episode, where, not really an argument, but you tried to make it sound like it was me that was the guilty party. And one of them.
I would never do that.
Yeah. And one of them, you admitted that you were wrong, just to make it so like the first one sounded even more legit on your end. That being said, I asked for some comments, and so far, comments have weighed in my favor that I'm the one to be trusted.
No, dang it!
Which is accurate. They're smart people. Good job.
How dare you?
You have little faith in our listeners to be able to discern the truth.
I thought they would just like me better.
They might like you better. They might think I'm obnoxious. I'm just more trustworthy.
Aren't I the better person?
Yeah, weigh in, people. Is Ruby better than Shaylock? I won't be offended, whatever you answer.
I will be, so you better weigh in my favor.
Anyway, so we've already recorded the episode after this, and so that update on where we're at and when we're recording will sound weird when we talk about what's been going on over here, because we've already gone through the whole Safari Zone stuff in Pokemon Go, and it was a lot of fun. Well, at least for me. Ruby struggled getting Safari Balls because she didn't do the paid stuff, so she had to rely on other things.
And, yeah, it sucked.
And other people would spend Pokestops and get Safari Balls, but she wouldn't. But we both did catch the Snorlax with like the studded rocker jacket, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we, with your mom, we also got a Toxtricity, one of the versions of Toxtricity, because there's like 2 different ones or something, I guess. And we got the one with like the purple on it, so like probably the poison's more on the poison side than the electric side. I still haven't finished the quest I got when I got to branch off between poison and electric Pokemon, I think. But I'm on the last step, I believe. So I think there were some bonuses for the game if you had finished it already, but I failed. And now we're in like the final stretch of the max out season, which had all the Galarian stuff. And so there's a catch quest where all of them need one kind of Pokemon. I forget what it was. I already caught it. And then each one needs a starter from Galar. So like Scorbunny and all of them, you know, each one needs one of those. But then each one needs a different Galarian Pokemon to be hatched, like the Galarian Slowpoke and the Galarian Ponyta. And those all come from like friendship eggs, but my egg stuff was full. So I like put everything in incubators, but I haven't gone anywhere since then. So nothing's hatching. So I don't know if I'm going to make it. But on top of that, there's also a new Pokemon that's supposed to be hatchable, which there's a catch quest for that one too. And it's Galarian Corsola, which I already went through all that in the summer just to get the other Corsola. So I need to go running or something. I don't know. I need to hatch some eggs quick and get some friendship eggs before the time's up. But then we've also got some hints at what's coming for the new season. They always do like 3 months or whatever. And this one's going to be based off of Black and White. And I don't really know a lot about Black and White, but I'm excited about it. So I know it was supposed to be kind of a fresh start for the Pokemon series in the games, or at least it was meant to be. And some people really hate it. Some people, it's like their favorite game from what I've heard online and stuff. But I also know it takes place in a region that's supposed to be based off of like America and stuff. So that's kind of cool.
That's fun.
Because like the first 4 regions are all based off of areas of Japan.
Ooh.
And then we get America, and then we get one that's like France area, and then we get one that's, I guess, technically also America, because I think it's based off of like Hawaii. But Hawaii is different. I mean, it's great. Oh, and because I purchased the thing for the Safari Zone, my shiny rates were supposed to go up, and I didn't find anything the first day, and I was so annoyed. And then my wife only played a little bit, and she caught a shiny Shinx. And I'm like, seriously? You've been playing for like an hour and I've been playing all day and you got a shiny? What kind of crap is this?
I think you should stop purchasing shiny things.
No. because the next day I didn't get anything either until the like last hour and a half when we were hitting the Pokestops and stuff, because we hadn't done that yet. And I caught 3 while we were out, and when I got home, I caught 2 more. So I got 5 shinies in like an hour and a half, and I was very happy about that. One of them being the Shinx that I missed out on earlier.
And your shiny Bulbasaur!
Oh, that's right! Yeah, I've been hunting shiny Bulbasaur forever, because I have a ton of... I've had a decent amount of shiny Charizard, Charmander, Charmeleon, or whatever, and plenty of the Squirtle and its evolutions. But I did not have a shiny Bulbasaur to evolve yet. And now I do, and I'm very happy about that. And one of my shiny was one of the mighty Pokemon. Forget which one it was. That was cool.
It was like...
Oh, I know what it was. It was Electric. The other one that would have been cool, but I already have a shiny of, is the Dragalge. I also got a shiny Electabuzz, which I evolved pretty quickly because I had to evolve electric Pokemon for one of the quest things because I chose the electric path. So now I have a shiny Electivire, which wasn't as noticeable being shiny, but it was still cool with the blue shift in like the eye color and like some other areas, with still like a slightly orangish tint to the rest of them. Oh! And Blitzel, which I have not evolved yet, actually. Because that was towards the end. I already did the evolutions I needed, so. So I'm interested to see what my shiny Zebstrika looks like. Because I think Blitzel / Zebstrika is a pretty cool-looking Pokemon.
Yeah, he is pretty cool.
But yeah, and then we're going off to Black and White in the new season. In December and January and February, so. And also today, now that we're past Thanksgiving and it's Christmas time, I get to wear my fake Christmas sweater. It's basically just a long-sleeve shirt, but it's a little, and it's a little lighter than an actual sweater, so I don't die when everybody's around. But it's an Eevee Christmas sweater with all the Eeveelutions.
It's so cute!
With Eevee in the center.
If it goes missing, I definitely did not steal it.
It could have been Rosella, too, because she found it in the Christmas box, and she's like, oh, this is yours, isn't it? Yeah. Now it's mine! And I'm like, nope. Also, I think they announced a Season 2 for Pokemon Horizons. So all the parts for Season 1 is done, I guess, and Season 2 will be coming in February, I think. But we still haven't finished Season 1, so, you know, whatever.
Probably all getting impatient on us.
So I got a nice chunk of break time over the holidays, so we still have a few recordings to do, but then we will take a break from them. Maybe we'll get some more watched in there. There's a couple other things we want to do, too, that have nothing to do with Pokemon, though, like playing Tidal Blades. And there's a few more therapies for my son, physical therapies, before we're totally off for December, so that takes up a little time. But that's almost wrapped up as well. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and dive in. All right. Now time for the anime episode. So we start off with episode 174, or season 4, episode 15. Mountain Time, or Redian, Kaze no Tani, o Koete. Yeah, I know Kaze, because I named one of the Pokemon Kaze in Red and Blue. It's wind. And sure enough, translation, Redian, exceeding the Valley of the Wind.
3 exclamation points!
So that means, okay, Kaze no Tani, which means it belongs to, so the wind belongs to Tani, which is the valley then, Valley of the Wind, right? So Tani must be valley, and O Koete must basically mean exceeding, because O is usually for doing something, right? Like O Mimas, O Shimas, like playing, watching.
Oh, yeah, I right? guess it is.
Yeah, so Koete must be exceeding, or something along those lines anyway. Hey, we can actually figure that one out.
We're learning more and more every day.
All right, the gang is wandering some mountain range. And then Ash and Pikachu are racing, and a Ledian buzzes right by them. So they decided to see where it's going. They follow Ledian into a gust of wind that blows Ledian, Ash, and Pikachu back. Then some dude tells Pidgeotto to stop. That was where the wind was coming from, apparently, because as soon as it does, the wind dies off. And the guy has another Ledian beside him. So we have 2 Ledian around, and this Pidgeotto. Then a kid rushes forward, seemingly concerned for the other Ledian, the one that was blown back. Brock and Misty catch up, and they all end up at some large cabin with the guy and the kid. Turns out the man is a mountain patrol person, and he has Ledian and Pidgeotto to help him protect the mountains. The kid, Benji, is his son.
Isn't this the first time we've seen Ledian in the show?
Yes. I believe so. We've met Letty Ba in that one episode, the Whistle Stop, but now we get their evolution, Lettian. So Benji's training under his dad to be able to help more around the mountains and stuff, and they were training the Lettian too, his Lettian, because the dad's Lettian is already, you know, pretty solid or whatever. They do this so they're prepared for all kinds of weather and emergencies, because it can get kind of crazy up in the mountains. Then the dad leaves to check on a town after some message or report or something comes in. And Benji runs his Lettian through an obstacle course or something like, or not an obstacle course. I think it's just a course through some trees. Like he's supposed to zigzag around or something.
Yeah. Just basically training like if he was looking for someone or something.
Right. But it ends with it being captured by Team Rocket. Ash starts them off by saying it looks like trouble because they see the capturing device first and like the device that captures Lettian first. And that is the opening Team Rocket needs for their interesting intro.
It looks like trouble because that's what it is.
And make it double. The twerp is a whiz. And they close out their motto with an outstanding outro.
Team Rocket cleaning up at the speed of light.
We'll take your dingy Pokemon and make them bright.
They probably would be very good at that professionally if they decided to go that way.
Very true. So they shoot Lettian back at them, which knocks Benji back, but, more importantly, causes Misty to drop Togepi. Then Team Rocket uses their vacuum to suck in Pikachu and Togepi.
So is that Togepi trouble?
She didn't, like, I don't know. What do you think it is?
I don't know, that's why I
asked. Yeah, I mean, well, it just being taken, I don't think so. But if it gets into antics is usually when we have some Togepi trouble, I think.
All right.
And Togepi isn't, like, Togepi's in trouble, but, like, being captured, just like
but,
Pikachu.
But, like, if Togepi wandered off on its own accord or something.
Well, even if it's gone, but it causes other antics to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Which will happen, and we will have a mark in Togepi trouble in this episode.
Oh, you put it in there, okay.
All right, so Lettian tries to save them, but they turn their vacuum back to the blowing out setting, and Lettian still hasn't learned to fly through that, as we saw earlier with the Pidgeotto. And so we kind of know what the arc of this plot is going to be. For Lettian, at least.
Yeah.
So then Team Rocket starts to say they're off again in some way, but they don't get even close to saying whatever it is as their balloon is caught in high mountain winds. The gang, along with Benji, plan to go after them. Meanwhile, we find that Team Rocket is on their deflated balloon and trapped on some spikes on a cliff.
I forgot about this part.
Jesse is flipping out and causing strain on the ropes holding them up. Wind picks up and causes them all to be a bit nervous, and so James brings out Victory Bell to use Vine Whip to help them all out, but it is a distracted Pokemon and eats James, which causes them to rock the basket some more, and the ropes snap, sending them all plummeting. They land on a different rocky spike, and it frees Togepi and Pikachu from their glass cage. The spike they landed on snaps off and falls, and basically turns into a rock sled down some of the mountain. They all think they're gonna die, and then the spike sled lands on a narrow pillar where they need to stay balanced, otherwise it'll tip any which way. Like, it's just very precariously balanced.
Mm-hmm. So they're, like, running around trying to keep it balanced. It's so funny.
Ash and Co. are blocked by a rock avalanche, closing the road they were traveling on. So Benji leads them to a rope ladder that will take them to a service road. But the rope ladder hasn't been used in years. Sure enough, the ladder is pulled off the cliff face in a high gust, and everyone but Benji begins to fall. Then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia? This Pokemon can use a 10,000-volt Thunder Wave attack. So when we get back, Benji caught part of the rope, and then Lettian helps lift the rope, but the wind comes in and it isn't looking great. Ash sends out Noctowl to help, and they make it. Both Lettian and Noctowl are exhausted, but Noctowl even more so, because it hasn't been training up in the mountains like that. Team Rocket gets into a fight over a chocolate bar, and it almost sends them all plummeting, since they're supposed to be balancing on this rock. They run back and forth until they manage to find balance again, but then Togepi walks off and starts causing the weight to shift, causing some trouble, you know? But fortunately, Wobbuffet pops out like he does on his own and sends the rock tipping back the other way, only it goes too far the other way, and they all plummet to their deaths again. And hilariously, Victory Bell is on James's head again. Because it was still out of the Pokeball. With the whole balancing act.
They should just put all the Pokemon in Pokeballs and then, like, stand in a tower in the middle.
But wait! Togepi starts waving its tiny little arms, and suddenly, they are all back on the rock and balanced. And Togepi has the chocolate bar. Someone mentions teleport, and Jesse says maybe they just dreamed they all fell. But it almost seems more like Togepi caused everything to rewind and go back in time instead of just a regular teleport.
I don't know, because she got the chocolate bar.
That's true. So yeah, just it teleported everything right where it wanted it. In what order it wanted it. Yeah. Which included the chocolate bar for it. Yeah, that could be.
Either way.
But it does seem weird that Togepi decided to teleport them back on the precipice with the chocolate. Like, it shows what was important to Togepi. It wasn't trying to get them all into actual safety, which would have made a lot more sense.
Well, Togepi still seems like a little baby, so...
True, true. So then Ledian finds them all and goes to report. Meanwhile, the rock is going back and forth again because now Togepi is wandering around again and Pikachu is chasing him, trying to stop him in a combined Togepi Trouble and Big Brother Pikachu moment. When the twerps arrive, Team Rocket is thrilled to see them and wonder what took them so long. Because they know they're going to save them. Right? Instinctively. They're always going to help. So it's just so funny that they're so excited to see the gang. Bulbasaur can't reach out to help as its vines are too short and the winds are blowing strong again. But Ledian offers to help. So, of course, Ledian fights the winds and helps rescue everyone. Once rescued, James scoops up Pikachu and Togepi and sends out Weezing. They're going to get away, but the wind comes in again. Only this time, it is Pidgeotto. The dad has returned. So then Benji and Dad use their Ledians to knock Team Rocket over and freeing their captives. Pikachu sends Team Rocket blasting off again! Ding! At the end, everyone is thankful and happy, and the stars start coming out. Benji's Ledian starts to glow on its, like, black spots on its wings and everything, because they look like a ladybug, which apparently react to the stars, which supposedly shows that Ledian is well-trained, which then means Benji is now a part of the Mountain Patrol. And it was really weird to me, because I was, like, wondering why the ladybug, like, why does a Ledian... spots glow with the stars, because Ledian is also known as like the 5-star Pokemon or something, which also seemed weird, but apparently has to do with actual stars. So I'm wondering if there's some lore or something that connects ladybugs to stars or something, but I'm just, yeah, I don't know.
That's kind of weird.
I'm kind of curious, that's all. But as we've recorded these in out of order, but we did watch them in order, in the movie there's Ledian in there too. And their spots are glowing when they're going through at night. So they keep that consistent.
No, I'm definitely interested.
Anyway, Team Rocket apparently landed back on the rock, teetering again. Which is odd, since that original rock fell during the Ledian rescue of everybody.
Maybe it was like a different rock the exact same way.
Maybe. And then Team Rocket falls and dies, and we never hear from them again.
Well, that was a
they
brush.
Do fall, but they don't. They come back. And our who's that Pokemon? It's Raichu. So, our tallies this time are interesting intro, outstanding outro, distracted Pokemon, Togepi Trouble, and Big Brother Pikachu. All right, and now it's time to rank it. All right, do you want me to do it first, or do you want to do Mountain Time?
You got this.
Okay. Let's see, the Togepi Trouble stuff on the rock was fun. I thought Ledian seemed like a cool thing with the glowing with the stars, so that was an interesting new thing.
I am a sucker for space things. Related.
But the overall plot was whatever to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely liked it better than like Hookline and Stinker. Mm. Probably Fossil Fools,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Fossil Fools was meh.
So I think it's probably under Beauty and the Breeder, which was the Vulpix and the return of the Vulpix owner. Two Hits and a Miss was interesting with Hitmontop, and I liked, like, the plot of that guy that shows up, but there was definitely some more humor in this one, so I'm not sure where I want it. It's either between Beauty and the Breeder and Two Hits and a Miss, or between Two Hits and a Miss and Fossil Fools. It's kind of where I'm leaning.
I think I would put it under Two Hits and a Miss, but it's up to you.
All right, that's what we'll go with. The next we have Season 4, Episode 16, Wabu Palooza, or Sonansu no Mura, Village of Sonans. So I'm guessing Mura is village, and Sonansu, or Sonans, is Wobbuffet. Alrighty, Ash and Co. finish taking a break and are going to head back out on the road, but then a group of Wobbuffet appear all around them. Turns out they are near a village where everybody has a Wobbuffet, and they're having an annual Wobbuffet festival. They get a tour of the town and festival, and then we cut to Team Rocket. They are exhausted and hungry, like usual, and just arrived in the town themselves. James wants a hot buffet, and Wobbuffet takes that as his cue to pop out. So they're annoyed with Wobbuffet, and then they see other Wobbuffet. Before they yell too much at them, because they're always annoyed, especially Jesse, at Wobbuffet, a woman shows up named Lulu, and she loves their Wobbuffet and thinks it is inspiring that visitors like them visit year after year. So she invites them over for a meal, and they definitely decide to play along as fans of Wobbuffet.
Wobbuffet gets a day to himself.
While they eat, Lulu puts a ribbon around Wobbuffet's head so we as an audience can tell which one is which. But also, they give that reason in the show, too. Like they say, they're doing it so that it can be told apart. Despite all the other Wobbuffet not being marked in any way. So, like, if it was a reason in the show, you would think everybody would have something on their Wobbuffet to make them different.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Maybe she wants to be able to tell that it's their Wobbuffet.
Or maybe...
And she knows some of the other ones in town and stuff.
Yeah, maybe all the townspeople know their Wobbuffet so well they can tell them apart.
Yeah, maybe they know not only that they know their Wobbuffet so well, but they live in town, so they can tell each other's Wobbuffet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So, like, that lady could tell someone else in town's Wobbuffet, but they're visitors, so yes. Can't tell their Wobbuffet apart.
So then Lulu shows off the big statue of Wobbuffet in the middle of town, and it actually looks a lot like the Wobbuffet mech from the Power Plant episode. Then we cut to a gang of three punks looking over the town from a high cliff, and one of them sounds like Michelangelo from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I looked it up, and he totally voiced Mikey in the 2003 cartoon. So not the classic 80s, 90s one, and not the 2012 Nick Turtles, but the one in between. Then this trio of punks calls out their fighting-type Pokemon, Hitmonlee, Machoke, and Primeape. So they plan to crash the festival. Then we cut back to Ash and Co., and Misty is pushing a Wobbuffet on a swing, and the rest are playing with Wobbuffet, like a bunch of different Wobbuffet. But then someone shows up and says that someone just attacked a person's Wobbuffet, and it's all bruised up. They all go to investigate with some townsfolk, and while they're trying to figure it out, someone says there was another Wobbuffet attack. And this one specifies that there were three of them that came and attacked it. So, once again, when Ash and Co. hear rumors of three punks without specifications, they immediately think of Team Rocket, and that's when it is never Team Rocket, because if it was, then the gang would know until they gave some specifics, like the hair and a talking Meowth.
Right. I like how when people give specifics and they're like, they had long pink hair and short blue, one of them had short blue hair and a talking Meowth. Well, even if they don't say the talking Meowth.
It's usually the talking Meowth that gets them to realize, because yeah, even the hair doesn't do it.
But sometimes the hair, they're like, that must have been Team Rocket. Sometimes. But whenever they're in disguise and their hair is sticking out,
yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Never, ever. So weird. They're crazy.
So meanwhile, Team Rocket is sneaking around because they're going to steal all the food that's for the festival from the festival storehouse. But then a townsperson leads Ash and Co. on the hunt for the ones beating up Wobbuffet, and they see someone sneaking around the storehouse. All of Team Rocket cover their faces with bushes and sit still. But Ash and Co. actually see through this particular disguise.
Oy, oy.
When Team Rocket is accused of beating up Wobbuffet, they defend themselves, and Meowth almost lets the cat out of the bag of what they were really up to. He's like, we weren't beating up Wobbuffet, we were gonna go steal his food. Then Lulu shows up, and they are able to turn this around on the quote-unquote mean kids accusing them of beating up Wobbuffet. Lulu thinks Jesse, James, and Meowth are nice, and she offers up her place for them to stay during the festival. Then another townsperson shows up and says there was another attack, which definitely clears Team Rocket's name from this particular crime. And with the gang chasing down the attacker problem, Team Rocket is left alone so they can get back to stealing food. Ash and Co. then find another Wobbuffet being beat up, and the thugs are next to the statue laughing at all the pain they're causing. When Ash and Co. confront the Crashers, I realize there was another familiar voice, and it was the same actor that did Faulkner, the flying gym leader.
Huh.
So we have Michelangelo and Faulkner as part of the punk group.
And then unknown.
Actually, I think the other one is, if I remember correctly, it's Meowth's actor.
Wait, actually?
I think so. I could be wrong, but I think Meowth's actor actually did one of them too.
That's hilarious.
Then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This vicious Pokemon feeds on Pidgey's eggs.
Ooh.
When we come back, one of the townspeople realizes he knows the punks. They had come around a year ago and trained their fighting Pokemon by having them break houses and stuff in town. Then they ended up at Lulu's place, but Lulu's Wobbuffet used Counterattack and Mirror Coat to take out the fighting Pokemon. It's interesting that they bring up Mirror Coat as part of the move line of Wobbuffet, because we've only had Counterattack brought up all this time. But we'll get more in depth on that in the next episode.
But don't get your hopes up, because they don't stay consistent.
Well, there's an interesting thing about that in the next episode that we'll definitely talk about.
Yeah, but it's... Yeah, we'll get to it.
They came back to disrupt the festival to get revenge. They plan to take down every Wobbuffet in town. Meanwhile, Team Rocket finishes up packing up the food from the storehouse, and then Team Rocket sees Officer Jenny and her Wobbuffet along with Lulu rushing toward the town square. So, just like in the Spinarak one, in this town, Jenny uses Wobbuffet instead of Growlithe. Then we're back with Ash, and he's ready to battle these punks. He, Brock, and Misty send out Pokemon, but they are stopped by Lulu and Jenny. Pokemon battles are strictly prohibited in town during the festival in honor of Wobbuffet not attacking first.
Okay, not attacking first, right?
Right.
So it would be like a counterattack and just self-defense if they fought the Crashers.
Sure.
And that's what Wobbuffet does. So it doesn't make sense.
Not fully, I agree. But humans are subject to logical inconsistencies. So the punks don't care, but decide to follow the rule for now and just attack the festival symbol. The statue thing. Team Rocket is hiding in the bushes and have trouble with the townspeople not doing anything, so they decide they'll step in. Ash almost fights back, but Lulu stops him again. Then Team Rocket arrives in their balloon and give us an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble, we're on the way.
Make it double, we'll save the day. Then Team Rocket confront the thugs, because they don't care about breaking rules. Jesse and James send out Arbok and Victory Bell, and this is hilarious because Victory Bell is a distracted Pokemon again, but this time it eats Meowth. Then after Arbok and Victory Bell are defeated, Jesse chooses Wobbuffet, and the punks laugh at Wobbuffet, especially with the headband on its head, to keep it, like, the ribbon thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Wobbuffet takes them all out with counterattacks. The three fighting-type Pokemon go flying up in the air, and ding! Then the punks run away. And I really like this, because we both disagreed with their rules about the festival of not fighting at all. Whereas they should be okay with fighting back, or countering, or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But they just want to be pacifists, basically, and let anything happen. And I really enjoy characters that are, like, that fight against the idea, like, the problems of the idea, and actually, like, get involved. And so, like, to me, Team Rocket, in this moment, not overall, because they're still stealing the food, are heroes. Like, they're very heroic in this moment, I feel like. I liked this. Like, screw your rules. We're going to protect all of this, because this is wrong.
Yes, that is good.
I really enjoy that, I guess. So yeah, the punks run away, and Team Rocket decide to leave so they can't be in trouble for breaking the rules. All of the town are thankful to the nice Team Rocket, and then Team Rocket grabs their stolen food and takes off. So Jenny and Ash and Co. give chase. Staryu takes the balloon down, and Team Rocket thinks they're still in the clear. Because no battling during the festival. But Jenny explains that that's inside the village, and they're not inside the village anymore. So, Pikachu zaps them, and Team Rocket blasts off again!
Ding!
Then Ash and Co. stay the night to enjoy the celebrations with food and fireworks. And our who's that Pokemon? It's Sneasel, who we have not encountered in the game. And I don't... Have we seen it in the show? I don't think we've seen it in the show. But we have seen it in the manga. Because that was Silver's first Pokemon that he was using. And so our tally is only two. Interesting intro and distracted Pokemon. Now, it's time to rank it. Alright, what do you think, Ruby?
Yeah, I kind of liked it. I think Wobbuffet's a great Pokemon, so it was kind of fun. And Team Rocket's heroic moment was kind of cool. And then, like, you can't fight us because it's, like, Wobbuffet Day. But then they fight him because he was out of the village.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
So I think it's probably even above typecasting. It definitely goes under airtime.
Okay.
What do you think? I don't know.
I think I might actually like it better than Hassel in the Castle, even. It's hard to say. It kind of goes in line with a lot of those right there.
Right? But... it's just like, those are good episodes.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I don't know, they're just good episodes. They're all good.
Yeah, all three of these are like really like spot on, I feel like. And so yeah. I'm not really sure, but I think I like it better than Hassel.
That sounds good with me.
Because Hassel in the Castle also had some fun Wobbuffet moments, so I think we just are big fans of Wobbuffet. All right. So we're on Season 4, Episode 17, Imitation Confrontation, or Mezase Metamon Masuta Imite Futatabi, or Aim to Be a Metamon Master. Imite Returns.
3 exclamation points.
And so, let's see, Metamon is the Pokemon, because they're aiming to be a Metamon Master. Masuta is just Master. So Mezase must have something to do with, like, aiming to be something or whatever. Like, trying to be something.
Mm.
I don't know if it's specifically aim to be, but I don't really know. And then Imite Futatabi, so Imite Return, so Futatabi must be Returns. And the Imite thing is specifically interesting to me because we've heard Imite once before, I think, in Season 1. I want to say it was right before the Safari Zone episodes. And right off the bat, in this episode, the narrator tells us that we're going to have a rockin' reunion as the gang heads into the Pokemon Center. And there they find Chansey and Nurse Joy. Only, Joy looks a little off. And Brock, right away, knows something isn't right. And we should all too, because Brock didn't go, "Oh, Joy!" and start, you know, flirting with her.
Yeah, I don't know if I noticed something was off necessarily, but I noticed that Brock was not going gaga over her.
And something similar happened the last time the gang met this character, because the last time this person looked sort of like Ash, but he knew it was a girl right away, but also did not flirt with her because he could also tell that she was too young.
Which is kind of weird.
It's very weird. It's very, very weird. But that's because his senses tell us it's Duplica and Ditto, not Joy and Chansey.
Yay, Duplica!
Now, that means that... because of the title, Metamon Master, right? To be a Metamon Master. That means Ditto must be Metamon in Japan. Well, Imite was like the name of the theater or whatever that Duplica was at. Like the House of Imite or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I'm guessing it must mean that that's her name. Imite must be Duplica's name in Japan. Which is interesting because it's also like, I'm guessing, based off the idea of imitation.
Yeah, it's like short for imitation.
Yeah.
Oh, but so is Duplica. It's like duplicate.
Oh, you just realized that? So yeah. Duplicate and Metamon is Ditto. Alright. Togepi loves pulling on Ditto's stretchy body while the gang and Duplica eat. There they learn that Duplica is in town to take part in an acting competition. Team Rocket is spying and want Ditto. Then the real Nurse Joy brings out another Ditto that belongs to Duplica. This one she calls Mini-Dit. It looks the same, but we find out Duplica was having it examined because, like her last Ditto, this one has an oddity in its transforming. Whereas the original Ditto used to not be able to do the faces right, but then learned to. Apparently, this one doesn't change its size. So if it mimics another Pokemon that's about the same size, they'll look the same. But if it tries to mimic something much larger, not gonna happen.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of cute, actually.
Well, it will imitate it. It just won't be the right size.
It's kind of cute.
Agreed. Because they do show that off right pretty early on by having it turn into Onyx. And Misty's able to hold this little Onyx in her hands.
Yeah.
Some people were, I think even in the show, they were, like, weirded out by it. But, yeah, like you said, it was cute.
Mm-hmm.
So Team Rocket spying some more and decide that Mini-Dit is the one they actually want. Because then they could get, you know, money for giving up these rare, small versions of big Pokemon. So then Misty makes Duplica feel bad for having weird Pokemon by saying something along the lines of that. Like, oh, you end up with all these weird Pokemon. But she didn't mean it in a mean way. Like, I forget how it was worded, and I could see how it was construed that way. But that's not really what Misty was trying to say.
Yeah. Also, I wonder if every Ditto has a little quirk at first.
Maybe. Or she just has a knack for finding them.
Maybe.
So they all try to cheer Duplica up, and Ash decides that they should have a battle. And that works. So it becomes Totodile versus Totodile. And it's a cute battle, but then Duplica tries to have her Mini-Dit Totodile use Hydro Pump. But Ash's Totodile doesn't know that move yet, and when a Ditto in the game transforms into another Pokemon, it only has the moveset that that specific Pokemon has. So it can only use the same exact moves, which is kind of a fun thing. So I like that they kept that consistent in the show. While also showing that Duplica studies the moves of all these Pokemon so that she can use whatever shows up, you know? But then, of course, before they can finish their battle, and explosion catches all their attention, and the Pokemon Center roof has a hole, and smoke is pouring out. And when the smoke clears, Ash and Duplica are standing up there on top of it. Though, both of their pants and shirts are a bit too small, and their faces look off and a bit menacing. And then we get an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble, whatever you do.
And make it double. We look just like you.
And wasn't Ash, James, and Duplica Jesse?
Ooh, I think I hear what you're saying.
James is actually a boy.
Yeah, that's fun. And then, weirdly, Wobbuffet ends this motto instead of Meowth, and without any argument from him, so it's not really an irritating interruption.
So it seemed weird to me, and I thought they were up to something.
And that's because they were, because Meowth is sneaking behind the group as they're distracted by Team Rocket, and Meowth snatches up one of the Totodiles, which is Mini-Dit, which is what Team Rocket was after. I really thought this was going to go in the direction of grabbing the wrong Pokemon, because they look alike, but the show did not go that route.
They went with Team Rocket being smart.
Yep. However, Ash also had to wonder, and he asks his Totodile if he's the real one. Which helps the audience all know that which one did get grabbed.
Because didn't Totodile just jump around excitedly?
I think so. Team Rocket is off in the woods with their stolen Pokemon, and James thought maybe they should have taken more Pokemon since they were already at the center. Jesse says that them getting greedy is usually their downfall. So James agrees, and Meowth doesn't, and instead of taking Mini-Dit back to the boss, they are going to make Mini-Dit transform into mini-Pokemon and trade them for rare Pokemon, and then steal Mini-Dit back. And so I might have said that was their plan from the get-go, but I was wrong. I forgot that they were just going to take it to the boss. But Meowth is like, no, let's do even better.
So yeah, then they get greedy.
Yup.
And
it's also a really convoluted plan. Because they're still having to steal Pokemon every time. It maybe is stealing the same one back, but that still seems quite the challenge. Why not just steal the other Pokemon? Doesn't make any sense. Oh, Team Rocket. And oh, Meowth. Then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. Use a Fire Stone on a Vulpix to get this Pokemon. What a challenging hint. Team Rocket tries to trade a mini Arbok, and the gang show up and think this is very suspicious, and that it must be Mini-Dit. A fight breaks out that returns Mini-Dit to Duplica. Then Duplica fights Jesse by having Ditto turn into Arbok and Mini-Dit turning into Mini-Wobbuffet. Ditto Arbok tackles Wobbuffet and is counterattacked. Then Arbok attacks Mini-Dit with Poison Sting, and that's counterattacked. So Team Rocket's Wobbuffet uses a counterattack on Poison Sting. This is an important fact for discussion later. So James tries to get Pikachu during the battle by sending in Weezing. When that doesn't work, this all becomes a 3-versus-3 battle as Pikachu hops in to join the fight. And this is where things get a little weird. Pikachu uses a Thunderbolt or something, and Wobbuffet, Team Rocket's Wobbuffet, counters, sending it into the crowd. I had no issue with this fact because even though counter is supposed to be for physical attacks, because the show has just made Counterattack counter anything, there's no reason for it to continue doing so, right?
Yeah, like, just, it's fine, just let it be, right?
Right, it's just how the show does it.
Yeah.
But then, the show decides to get technical. Arbok tackles Mini Wobbuffet and gets countered. Then Weezing uses Sludge Attack, and Mini Wobbuffet uses Mirror Coat to counter that.
And I'm like, what is Mirror Coat? Why do they do the exact same thing?
Right. Which then Duplica explains that Wobbuffet has two types of counterattacks. One is just counterattack, and it's for physical, and Mirror Coat is for special attacks.
But it's not.
In the game, it is. Mirror Coat is for special attacks.
Which, I know, but like...
Which Sludge Attack and the Electric Attack and all that stuff are.
The Electric Attack was...
Already worked.
Counterattack.
Yep.
Why didn't they just leave it alone?
Well, we're going to get more into it here. So, this did seem really ridiculous to me, since the episode itself decided to explain how it's all supposed to work while already disobeying the rule. But then James chimes in after the explanation and says something that technically makes absolutely zero sense. James says, I think I understand. That kid's little dodo wasn't obeying Jesse's commands. It was doing what it took to protect itself.
What? That didn't make... I didn't understand.
James is saying that the kid's little dodo,
uh-huh,
as Wobbuffet, wasn't obeying Jesse's commands. It was just doing what it took to protect itself.
Wait, but the kid's little dodo wouldn't...
Correct. Obey Jesse. That's what I'm saying. It makes absolutely zero sense. And then Duplica even affirms this nonsense, like agreeing with it, by saying that Mini Dit just played along until Duplica could find it, since it knew she would. None of this, in the context of everything that happened in the episode, makes any sense whatsoever, because...
I don't understand, but they're saying...
I know, because the Mini Dit never was Wobbuffet for Team Rocket. So it never would have done, and it never, like... The only thing that they could be saying is that, sure, it turned into Arbok and did that because it was just biding its time.
But that came out of nowhere. James saying this, it doesn't make... Right. Oh, I'm so confused.
I know. But in the context of the situation, I'm guessing it's a translation issue. I think they made a mistake in translation, or when they were writing it, they weren't paying attention to what they're writing. Because what it seems like they're trying to say is... they're not saying this at all. But it seems like what they had originally intended was for James to be like, oh, Jesse's Wobbuffet had not been obeying Jesse's commands every time it told it to counterattack throughout all the other episodes. It was only doing what it was supposed to be doing to protect itself. So when Jesse's like, counterattack, it counterattacked when it was a physical move, but it mirror-coded when it was not a physical move. Like, it just did what it needed to. Which would explain everything and make so much more sense than whatever James and Duplica are saying in this moment that really has no logical sense at all.
I'm going to go with there was someone being stupid when writing this.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what was going on there, but I think that that was the intention and that somehow got missed.
Because
it's the only thing that really makes any sense, since they actually, like, what they really say really doesn't make any sense at all. Unless there's a cutscene somewhere. So anyway, both Ditto turn into Pikachu, and all together they thunder Team Rocket, and so they're blasting off again!
Ding! But before they were blasting off, they were trying to block the Thundershock and...
Jesse was trying to remember what command to use.
Yeah, I'm like, it's not that hard.
That was funny that she was like, made her second guess when she could have just let Wobbuffet take care of it.
Yep.
Anyway, our who's that Pokemon, to nobody's surprise, I'm sure, is Ninetales.
Wait, I thought it was Growlithe. Or canine, not Growlithe.
And our tally are Rockin' Reunion, interesting intro, and out. Oops, I forgot that. We had an outstanding outro, too, but I forgot to mention it in the episode.
Team Rocket imitating and blasting off at the speed of light.
Surrender now, or prepare to fight, fight, fight. Wobbuffet! So, James didn't say anything different. But Wobbuffet took over from Meowth without a problem, and Jesse did say something different. Now, it's time to rank it.
Your turn.
It was fun seeing Duplique again, and some of the mechanics and stuff with the battling and, like, her trying to use Hydro Pump was fun. Small Onyx, small Arbok were fun. Small Wobbuffet was fun. I like that there's a theme of Duplique getting weird Ditto that don't behave like they're totally how they're supposed to.
Yeah.
Although her normal Ditto does. It was also weird that she has two Ditto, and one of them is just named Ditto, but the other one actually gets a nickname of Mini Ditto.
Well, it's just like Mini Ditto.
I know, but still. You can at least tell it apart, but like, why not name all your Pokemon? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I know I definitely liked it a good amount.
Yeah, it was certainly enjoyable. So I'm thinking definitely above Carrying On, which was the Pidgey one.
Yes, I could agree with that. Yeah, I know it's kind of hard to rank it, but I feel like it could go in between Hassle and the Castle and A Better Pill to Swallow.
Yeah, you think so?
I think that would be a good spot, but anywhere would probably be a good spot above Carrying On.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about it. There were things I really liked about Better Pill to Swallow, right. With weird-looking Shuckle when they're getting enamored and licking Jesse was funny, and Pikachu being, like, tempted, like, being brought in, but then, like, when it was stopped being hypnotized and the reaction there was hilarious to me.
Maybe right below Better Pill to Swallow.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
That right. Seems like a better spot.
Better.
Or a bitter spot.
All right, and then our next episode is Season 4, Episode 18, The Trouble with Snubble, Snubble.
Snubble, Snubble, Snubble.
Or Nyasu to Buru to Grandburu, which is Nyarth, Bull, and Granbull.
With only one exclamation point and one question mark. What is up with this people? Come on.
So Nyarth, that's Meowth. Because nya is the cat noise in Japan.
Yep, that makes sense.
And bull is snubble, and grand bull is grand bull. Alright. So the gang is resting by a river, and Jumping Jigglypuff! Ash spots Snubble!
Yay!
And Brock says it might have been a wild one, but Ash saw the ribbons and knows that it has to be Madam Munch Money's Snubble. Team Rocket is trudging along, hungry again, and Snubble pokes out of the bushes and sees Meowth, and he bites onto Meowth's tail. Meowth announces he hates that stupid Snubble and flings it far off somewhere else into the woods. The gang is walking along, and Ash is wondering where the Snubble went, but figures it must be long gone already. Then they see a worn-out man in tattered clothing, and we get another rockin' reunion, as it turns out to be Jeeves, Much Money's butler that they met way back in the first episode with Snubble.
Mm-hmm. It was a funny rockin' reunion because we're both like, wait, we know him?
Right. Turns out he and Much Money have been looking for Snubble, and they had to split as they foraged for food. But soon, Much Money swings in like Tarzan in her usual rich attire that is now all tattered and worn as well, and she's gained some muscle, which she shows off. But it means we also got a second Rockin' Reunion.
Toh.
Brock decides Much Money will be a great trainer now that she is strong, because apparently physical strength matters. Ash says he saw Snubble, and so they all go looking. Meanwhile, Snubble is sitting on a rock and is super sad, remembering Meowth saying he hates her. Then she fantasizes about Meowth showing up with flowers and offering his tail to be bit when she sees some bushes rustling. And a tail even emerges that looks like Meowth's tail, so she rushes over and bites it, but it is attached to a Mankey, and it ain't happy. But Mankey seems to never really be happy. Well, yeah. Primate more so, but... The gang and Much Money find the beat-up Snubble, and so they all bring Snubble to a Pokemon Center. Turns out, it's okay. And so Brock wants a physical exam for himself, too. And Misty has to pull him away by his ear, babysitting Brock. Because he was talking to Joy about getting one.
Yeah.
The gang then learn that Much Money is converting the gardens of her estate into a huge nature park so Snubble can explore the outdoors without ever leaving the estate. This doesn't seem to sound great to Snubble. Snubble looks outside and sees the moon and thinks of Meowth and his tail. So she gets up, out of bed, and leaves out the Pokemon Center window. Then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia? This Pokemon uses mostly its feet to battle. Back to the show, we see Team Rocket walking along in town, and then Meowth hears people looking for Snubbull, and so Meowth runs and hides, fearing Snubbull. Jesse and James decide to catch the Snubbull, using Meowth as bait, so that they can then return the Snubbull to Much Money for a reward.
And they have Meowth tied up hanging from a tree as bait, and he's struggling and trying to get free.
And so Snubbull finds Meowth dangling from that tree, and then Team Rocket pops out from behind the tree with a modified motto!
Prepare to say goodbye to all of our troubles.
Prepare to say hello to Snubbull.
To protect ourselves from being poor.
When we get enough, we'll still get more.
We'll capture Snubbull and return it to its rich owner and get a big reward.
Then there won't be anything we can't afford.
Jesse.
James.
Team Rocket likes blasting off at the speed of light.
But catching that Snubbull and getting that reward would be a delight. Jesse and James try to present the terrified Meowth to Snubbull, but Snubbull stands there looking angry. And then Snubbull begins to glow and... evolution! We now have Granbull.
Ooh. Wait, that's so sad. Because now we won't have a jumping Jigglypuff Snubbull.
Well, Granbull can be a jumping Jigglypuff too. As long as it still behaves the same way. Because it still wants Meowth. So Wobbuffet shows up and Jesse is glad to see him. Because she didn't call him out, he just showed up like usual. And tells him to go face Granbull. Wobbuffet instead jumps back farther and farther away, terrified. Oh, Wobbuffet. Arbok is sent in, and Granbull sees Arbok's tail as Meowth's tail and takes a big bite, creating some hilarious expressions from Arbok. Then suddenly, Meowth calls in his lean, mean, fight the bite machine. It is another Meowth-looking busted bot. Team Rocket all take cover inside. They use the robot tail to get Granbull to latch on, and then try and shake it into a cage. But it won't let go. This is when the gang shows up. Team Rocket claims to have caught Granbull for Much Money, which they technically were doing. And the gang doesn't believe them, but Much Money is happy. But then they can't get Granbull off the tail, and Much Money and Jeeves start to think it is a trick, when it really isn't this time.
Yeah.
Poor Team Rocket are getting screwed over on this one.
Well, they did have bad intentions.
Oh, absolutely.
They're just waiting to be paid for getting it.
Yeah, no. I know. But it's just funny, because they actually were trying to get it to her.
Mm-hmm.
So Meowth tries to shock Granbull off the tail, which shocks Much Money and Jeeves, because they were holding on. So Ash now has, quote-unquote, confirmation that it was all a trick.
I mean, it looks a lot like it.
Oh, absolutely. So Team Rocket decides to try a new plan, and demand Ash hands over Pikachu if they want Granbull. Not that they can get Granbull off themselves right now, so...
Mm-hmm.
Cyndaquil, they're just trying to get whatever opportunity... take whatever opportunity presents itself, though, and it's pretty amusing to me.
Yeah.
Cyndaquil heats up the bot, and then Meowth accidentally launches the tail missile, which Much Money catches it on her own. She really has gotten very strong.
Really has.
Then she sends Granbull in to take down the Meowth bot. Granbull damages it pretty bad, and then Pikachu finishes it off and sends Team Rocket blasting off again!
Ding!
Madam Much Money and Granbull have a whole new appreciation for one another, and instead of taking the car back to the estate, the two race home on foot.
And poor Jeeves, he's like, I'll pull the car around, and they're like, well, run. And he's like, oh... great.
Yep. And who's that Pokemon? It's Hitmonlee. So our tally, we have a jumping Jigglypuff, because Snubbull was back, and now Granbull.
And no, he might never be back if he's with Much Money.
That's true. That does suggest that this might be the end for that one. Rockin' Reunion, we have two, with Jeeves and Madam Much Money. Babysitting Brock, when he's flirting with Nurse, asking for a physical exam. We had a modified motto, we had an evolution as Snubbull evolves into Granbull, and a busted bot with Meowth's lean, mean, fight the bite machine. Now, let's rank it.
Alright. I think I really liked it, with Snubbull especially, and Miss Much Money.
Yeah, Much Money.
Yeah, Much Money.
She has Much Money.
Yeah, I I really liked her, and I really liked Snubbull and Gramble.
I liked that she had bulked up, too. That
was fun. She was so funny. So I think it probably... Yeah, it probably goes above Imitation Confrontation. I think it might even go above Hassle in the Castle. But now does it go above Wobblepalooza?
I think, for me, like, while I enjoyed a lot of this episode, like, it was very amusing, and I liked Much Money's own evolution, along with her relationship with Gramble. But, like, the plot is very typical about being in the woods, looking for things, you know, all that stuff.
Lost in the woods.
Whereas, I don't know, I felt like there was more interesting plot to Wobblepalooza, with the separate schemes going on. And Team Rocket being blamed for it. And, like, both of them have Team Rocket kind of working with everybody else out of necessity or whatever. Like, and this one, they wanted to get the Pokemon to get money, but they were still kind of helping the situation. Whereas in Wobblepalooza, they had their scheme to steal stuff, but then they also wanted to help battle the other people that were being punks. And I thought that was just a more interesting plot, I guess.
So probably below Wobblepalooza then.
Yeah, I think so.
But does it go above Hassle in the Castle? Do you agree with that?
I think so. I think
okay, so that's a good spot for it then?
Yeah, I feel like it is.
All right. Then there it is.
All right. And now season 4, episode 19. Ariados, amigos. Or Ariadosu, Ninpo Batoru. Or Ariados, Battle of Ninja Arts.
And they brought their 3 exclamation points back.
You and your exclamation points. So, no secret, but we're going to run into an Ariados in this episode. We've had Spinarak, really? Now we get its evolution.
That's crazy. Maybe it'll be like, I don't know, like in the Entei, where we didn't really run into an Entei.
Could be. All right. The gang is taking a break by some water again, and Misty decided to go for a walk with Togepi. Now, as she picks some flowers, Togepi wanders off toward a bush, and then they see something poking out of it. Misty is sure it is some kind of bug. She screams, and so Ash and Brock rush over. The bush is cleared away, and it is an Ariados. I really like the look of this Pokemon. I've always liked how Ariados looks. I don't know why. I like the color scheme and everything. Like, just the way where they put it and stuff. And so I really was excited when I got a shiny Spinarak to see what the shiny Ariados looks like, which we've talked about before, and it looks amazing. They didn't just make it all one solid color like sometimes they do, which is annoying.
I bet Bear, my little brother, likes Ariados.
Oh yeah, he's a big spider fan too. Onyx and spiders. As they're examining the Ariados, which seems to be sleeping or something, a woman speaks up from atop a tree. Seems she has been looking for Ariados. Who is this woman? Why, it's Aya from the Poison Gym in Kanto. The one Ash fought first before taking on the actual gym leader there, Koga. It was also where Misty decided not to trade away her Psyduck.
Yeah.
So that's right. We have another Rockin' reunion.
We're getting that's a like lot.
3 episodes in a row now? And 4 total? Yeah, there's a lot of Rockin' reunions happening right now. And I'm here for it. She has her Venonat with her again. And then as Brock is flirting with her, a voice comes from nowhere and tells Ariados to begin the test. So Aya and Venonat go chasing after the spider Pokemon. But Venonat gets caught in a web, and so Aya fails. The voice speaks a few more times, and then he shows up. It is Aya's tutor, as he teaches Pokemon Jujitsu. So then they all head to the academy grounds, where many students are studying the skills taught there. Brock decides he's going to enroll too and have Aya as his personal tutor. Then he unleashes Pineco and introduces the Pokemon. And then Pineco explodes in his face in an amusing moment of friendly fire. Ash wants to study there too, and so Aya convinces the teacher to allow them all to have a single day of classes for free. They all end up dressed in ninja-type gear, and Ash is in red, Brock in yellow, and Misty in blue. The colors apparently match the kind of classes that they are going to attend. Misty takes beauty classes that she isn't thrilled about, but she changes her mind when she is told she will look like a movie star. Ash gets battle training, and Brock gets to go to technical class where they try to make attacks more effective. Misty's excitement takes a turn for the worse when she learns the beauty treatment comes from Spinarak.
And it's like a once-a-year kind of thing.
Yeah, and it gets all webbed up over her face.
So why couldn't they just have their own Spinarak doing it instead of coming from all over the world for one day?
Well, there's probably a process to it and technique to it. And it's probably more than just the webbing.
Oh, I suppose.
Brock and Pineco do great at a balloon popping course, and then, at the end, Pineco explodes in Brock's face for a second moment of friendly fire.
Which is kind of funny, because he's bragging, basically bragging, being kind of proud of how well he did, and then explodes.
Well, he's not even just doing it. Like, the teacher's like, oh, hey, you do really well with your Pokemon. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, then it explodes. In the battle class, a Hypno and Houndour battle, Houndour wins. Then it is Ash versus Aya, and they use Venonat and Bulbasaur. I think Ash used Bulbasaur back in their first battle, too, because I was like, that seems like a bad idea. Bug against grass. Not a good choice.
It makes sense if he made a bad choice more than once.
Yeah, but it was just interesting that they're battling the same Pokemon. But Bulbasaur wins. Team Rocket is spying on the Academy and are excited about all the Pokemon to catch. Then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon has the ability to copy an opponent's DNA. The gang...
They are really making these hints kind of obvious in some of these, aren't they?
Sometimes.
And sometimes they're, like, really obscure.
The gang are all chilling in a room after a day of training, and Pikachu sees Aya and Venonat training outside during the night. So Ash heads out there to join her. Suddenly, Venonat runs off as it senses something. So they keep the whole sensing thing, like, Venonat did for Tracy all the time.
Oh, yeah.
What was Tracy's profession?
Drawing girls?
No, his profession was a Pokemon watcher, but he usually drew, didn't he?
Yeah, he would draw.
What happens if you take the Y away from his name?
Tracy? Trace?
I just now realized that his name was what he did, just like Misty and Brock, because Brock is just Rock, you know?
That's...
With the B in front.
Funny.
It just never occurred to me before. But that was probably intentional.
It's probably because we don't care enough about Tracy to notice
things. Yeah, poor Tracy. So then there are lights turning on everywhere, and shouts about all their Pokeballs being gone. Then Misty, Brock, and the teacher all show up as they all realize there must be thieves in the compound. Fireworks explode, and Team Rocket shows up in magician-like get-ups, and they give their regular motto. But nothing exciting this time. Then they take off with all the Pokeballs and their balloon, and they snag Pikachu. The teacher and Ariados rush off, and Ariados uses his webs to create a glider for the teacher, so he flies off like a kite. Teacher pops the balloon, and Team Rocket sinks slowly down as Arbok puts holes in the teacher's kite. The teacher cuts the Pokeballs free, and then glides away and drops them for Brock to catch. Aya and Ash follow the descending Team Rocket. Pikachu is thrown free but still trapped in a cage and now in a tree. Team Rocket attacks, and Aya and Venonat have to take them on as Ash gets Pikachu and Ariados is too exhausted. Aya is having trouble, and then she's told to remember her lessons from before, and so she has Venonat rest in the middle of the fight, and then... Because rest is a move. We learned that with Snorlax. That was a pain in the butt for me. Because he would just go to sleep and then heal, and I would have to whittle him down again.
I wish I had figured out earlier my powers to throw at full health Pokemon.
Right.
I knew I had luck on catching them, but full health? Wish I'd known.
But yeah, so Venonat rests, and when the time is right, Venonat attacks. Because that's basically what Ariados did. Ariados ran off and kind of lurked for a minute, and Venonat thought it was going to get it, and so did Aya, but it turned out it had sprung a web somewhere in there that they couldn't see, and so it ran right into the web. So that was kind of where the lesson was coming from. And then Pikachu and Ash rush in to finish off Team Rocket and send them blasting off again. Ding! They all say goodbye in the morning, and Ash and Co. get back on the road. And our Who's That Pokemon? Why, it's Ditto. And so our tally for this episode is 1 Rockin' Reunion and 2 Friendly Fire. Now to rank it. Alright, well... I did like that we got Aya again. It was fun to see her. I like that Bulbasaur and Venonat got to battle again, which was cool. I like the whole ninja compound, and that whole thing was fun. The Pineco blowing up on Brock twice was hilarious. Misty having to deal with Spinarak web on her face for a beauty thing was also hilarious. I think all of that together, I want to put it above typecasting for sure. And really, I think that's where I want it.
Sounds good to me.
Right under Imitation Confrontation, which was the Ditto episode. All right. So then we move on to Season 4, Episode 20, Wings and Things, or Habatake Yanyanma Ashita no Sora e. Hey, Ashita, that's tomorrow.
Yep.
Flap Yanyanma, fly to tomorrow's sky. Oh, I knew Sora was sky. Forgot about
three that. Exclamation points again. They're doing amazing this time, guys.
So yeah, Ashita no Sora, so it belongs to, so tomorrow's sky. I don't know what the A at the end means, but... And Habatake must have something to do with Flap, because Yanyanma is obviously the Pokemon name, Yanyanma. Which for us is just Yanma, not Yanyanma.
Yep.
Alright, so, the gang is walking along, and then see a Yanma flying high. There are supposed to be some Yanma, or Yanma, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Well, decide away and stick to it.
I should. So there are supposed to be some Yanma on Route 35. We got told about them by people. I kept getting phone calls about them, but I've yet to run into one. I even went back when I got a phone call about them, but they didn't necessarily say there was a swarm or whatever it's called. So I keep going back and trying to find them, and I can't. Anyway, this Yanma decides to steal Ash's hat and fly off, kind of like the Mankey and Primate.
Yep.
The trainer of the Yanma finds it and won't let it go until it gives the hat back. Turns out the Yanma is a bit of a troublemaker, and much more so than stealing hats. It flies off again, and the trainer, Zachary, can't even get it to return to the Pokeball. It flies into town, and everyone freaks out and takes cover indoors. Thought that was weird. Then Yanma shatters the glass window to a bakery where the baker is sleeping. He is not happy, and it turns out that Yanma has done this a number of times, which is probably why everybody was freaking out. The baker drags Zachary back to his dad's place, and the gang follow. Mr. Evans, Zachary's dad, and the baker decide that Yanma has to go.
Which is so sad.
Yes. Well, it is hurting Mr. Evans' business, too, since he is a glassmaker and has to keep replacing the windows for free in town.
It's good that you mentioned for free, because I didn't catch on right away in the show, so I was like, how is that bad for business? Are they just going to give up buying glass from him? It'd be good for business. It'd be a sneaky way to do it, Team Rocket-like. But
which we'll get to.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's exactly what they tried to do, basically. But yeah, no, he has to replace him for free, because it's his son's Pokemon breaking him.
Mm-hmm.
Zachary is sad that he has to give it up, and he tells the gang that he found it during a really bad storm and Yanma was in bad shape. They found it during some glass delivery. They were delivering glass somewhere. But pretty soon after recovering, it shattered all the glass in the factory, which was also costly for Mr. Evans.
I could see how that was costly.
Zachary tried to train Yanma to stop beating its wings so fast and hard. The gang tried to brainstorm some other ideas, but none of them would work out. So they go into the woods, and Zachary releases Yanma onto a stump and gives him a snack before leaving him there. He is very sad. Zachary has second thoughts and goes back for his friend. But Yanma is not there anymore. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is just hanging out in the woods, and they spot Yanma flying around. So they catch the Yanma and tie him to a string like a leash. It tries to fly away, and it shatters some glass by beating its wings. So Jessie gets an idea about breaking windows.
But right before she got the idea, they were doing nothing wrong.
Yeah. That's true.
It was just catching a Yanma.
That's true. Then we get our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon sings a sweet lullaby for all to hear. Returning to the episode, Meowth rides along inside Victory Bell. This is a weird vehicle for him, almost like a cart, like a Mario Kart kind of thing or something. I don't know. It's really bizarre. I don't know why they chose this method, but they do it. And he's holding on to Yanma's string, so Yanma's flying through while he's bouncing on around inside Victory Bell. And they go through town, and Yanma shatters every town's window. And then, just in the nick of time, Team Rocket arrives, selling special glass that they keep in an ice cream cart because their glass is cool, and they specialize in frosted window panes.
Okay, so when they pull up, I notice the ice cream cart, but I'm like, okay, Team Rocket's using an ice cream cart. Big surprise there, they're doing something silly. But when they ask him about it and they say it's cool, I still don't notice. I'm like, okay, cool, whatever.
Oh, you didn't realize what they were doing?
No. Even when they say it was cool, I'm like, haha, because they're using an ice cream cart.
Right.
Still didn't notice it was ice.
So anyway, they get a bunch of money for all their glass to replace the windows, but of course their glass is actually sheets of ice. Team Rocket doesn't let Yanma eat, and it remembers how well it was fed by Zachary. Meanwhile, Ash and Co. are looking for Yanma, and they've been separated from Zachary. They find a Pokemon Center and go to ask if she has seen it. They find Mr. Evans there. Meanwhile, Zachary arrived in town and everyone glares at him as he asks about his Yanma. All their windows have melted by now and they think Zachary cooked up the scheme, so they drag him off to find his father again. They show up at the Pokemon Center and talk about the con artists, and Ash and Co. are pretty sure they know who is really to blame. Which, actually, surprisingly, they kind of catch on better than normal.
Yeah, and this time it's actually true.
Right. Then Meowth zooms by and Victory Bell with the Yanma and Team Rocket in their disguise show up to sell glass. Unfortunate timing, since the townspeople are there. So it's time to doff the disguises and jump into an interesting intro.
We don't sell glass, so prepare for trouble.
But we've got glass, and make that double. A battle is about to start, but Mr. Evans doesn't want the stained glass window he's been working on for the Pokemon Center to be shattered by Yanma. So he tries to discourage this battle.
Because it's really hard to make stained glass windows for him, apparently, and it takes a long time.
Right. So then Zachary tries to return Yanma, and this time it works, and so a fight can happen. And Yanma gets to use its wings for attacking, which helps teach it to stop shattering glass with that move, because now it can use it for battles. After a team-up tackle attack, Team Rocket is sent blasting off again!
Ding! Ding!
And that's that. So then, who's that Pokemon?
It's Jigglypuff!
And then our only tally is the interesting intro.
Yep. Now time to rank it!
Correctamundo. And it's your turn.
Well, I mean, it was good. I liked the episode. It wasn't, like, amazing, but it was fun. I'm thinking maybe between Two Hits and a Miss and Beauty and the Breeder, but I'm not married to that idea. What do you think?
Yeah, what did we put underneath Two Hits and a Miss already? Mountain Time?
Maybe.
You think it's better than Mountain Time?
Yeah, it might be.
Because, yeah, I would personally put it under Two Hits and a Miss, probably.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good.
All right, and the final episode we're covering today is Season 4, Episode 21, The Grass Root, or The Grass Route. But I think, I know I've been inconsistent in my pronunciation in the past with route and root, but both work, but I think when it comes to grass, root makes more sense. And in Japanese, it is Popoko Kusa Pokemon Batoru, or Popoko, Grass Pokemon Battle.
3 exclamation points. They were almost perfect this time around.
Popoko is obviously some kind of grass Pokemon. Kusa must mean grass. And Batoru is battle. And in case you didn't know, Pokemon is Pokemon. So as the gang is walking along, Brock is looking at a guide that says as soon as they get over this mountain, they will be in Ekrateek. Only, it's actually going to take 2 shorts, a special, and 2 more episodes before they are actually in Ekrateek. And when I say 2 more episodes, I mean 2 more episodes beyond this one. However, to note, the special does take place in some mountains, so it could suggest that they haven't quite crossed them yet. So, I mean, so the gang is running into a lot of grass Pokemon and see a cute little Skiploom skipping along.
Skiploom, Skiploom.
Its trainer shows up. And apparently the Pokemon's nickname is Skippy, and the kid's name is Ephraim. And I think we can now know that Popoko must be Skiploom.
Makes sense.
So he wants to battle Ash and one of his grass Pokemon. He likes to do grass battles. And so it becomes a battle between Skippy versus Chikorita. I don't know why I say Chikorita like that all the time. Anyway, Ash wins, and he is given a real hard time by Brock and Misty for taking it too far. Because he beat the Skiploom? Like,
yeah, that was a little obnoxious.
Like, you're supposed to beat them that way? Like, he didn't do anything, like, super, like, powerful. He didn't kick him while he was down. I'm like, what? It's not like he used Charizard. And even then, that would be fair, but still.
Yeah. They were being extremely obnoxious.
So that all seemed weird to me, but whatever. Then they accompany Ephraim back to his home and have a meal with Ephraim and his parents. The parents offer for Ash and Co. to spend the night. Turns out there is a traditional competition with just grass Pokemon in the area, and Ephraim is planning on competing in it. The parents name drop the Indigo Plateau battles, so a nice callback to that, and Ash says he should sign up for the tournament since he is in the Orange Leg Hall of Fame, after all.
Now so, he remembers?
Right. But it was cool that they named both the like championship stuff that Ash has been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
I like it when they bring up past episodes and be like, yeah, see, we've been here before. We still acknowledge that there's history. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is enjoying hamburgers in the lovely outdoors. Then they find a flyer for the grass Pokemon tournament. The prize are a bunch of leaf stones, and so James is going to enter with Victory Bell. He calls out that Pokemon to do some training, and we get a distracted Pokemon as he eats James. Meowth says it's too bad they don't have a second grass Pokemon for Jesse, but she just laughs, and she gets a brilliant idea so they can have two chances to win the prize.
I had a feeling where this was going, and I was right.
Yep. Back with Ephraim, he's training Skippy hard and getting him ready for the tournament. Meanwhile, Ash takes it easy and is overconfident in his skills.
I mean, he is in the Orange League Hall of Fame. I wouldn't say he's that overconfident.
Still, it's still a good idea to...
It's still a little cocky, and yeah. You should freshen up, but still.
Yeah. The next day, the tournament begins. Jesse's grass Pokemon is Meowth, back in his Sunflora costume.
This is a rockin' reunion because Sunflora Mouth is back.
That's not how this works.
Dang it.
Ash and Bulbasaur are up first and get ready to battle. But then we are hit with our Who's That Pokemon trivia. This Pokemon's tail has a small brain of its own. Back to the battle, Bulbasaur beats Gloom in their match. Then Ephraim and Skippy take on James, or should I say, Mr. Samaj. And Skippy wins, putting James out of the competition. Now it is Jesse, or Isij, with Meowth, as Sunflora. At first it's looking bad for Bulbasaur, who's against the Meowth, since Sunflora is using moves that it shouldn't have, like Scratch and stuff. But then some Razor Leaf attacks reveal that it is actually Meowth, and so Team Rocket begins with an interesting intro.
Prepare for trouble is our word to the wise.
And make it double, it's us in disguise!
I don't understand why James gave up his...
Well, he already lost, I think, so...
Oh, okay.
Team Rocket rushes over to steal the Leaf Stones, but Bulbasaur snags them and Vine Whips them out, and Team Rocket is off again as they got whipped again!
Ding! Ding.
Then it shows a montage of Skippy and Bulbasaur plowing through opponents, and now it is Ephraim and Skippy versus Ash and Bulbasaur. It looks like Skippy is going to lose, but it starts charging up a solar beam and unleashes it for the win! And there's not a whole lot more to this episode, which is kind of why you probably didn't remember it, because it's not that significant.
Well, there was a funny part that I was going to mention. Oh. Or not funny, stupid, kind of both. When he won, his parents were so proud and were talking to the crowd, and he's like, we always knew he was so smart, he was changing his own diapers as a baby, and we're like, then why wasn't he potty trained?
Right. And in case you didn't catch it, Mr. Samaj and Isij is just James and Jesse backwards. Their names are just thrown backwards. And then our Who's That Pokemon? It's Girafarig!
Ooh.
And then our tally is Distracted Pokemon, Interesting Intro, and Off Again, which I've decided to rename as just Off Again instead of We're Off Again, because it's easier to say.
Sounds good.
Now to rank it.
Your turn.
All right. It was a pleasant enough episode, but it was whatever. Yeah, it's probably under or above Mountain Time.
Under.
Because, like, Fossil Fools, Hook, Line, and Sinker, Dairy Tail Ending, none of them are really super strong for me. And this one was fine. Like, I put it above those, probably.
I can't believe Dairy Tail Ending was second at one point.
All right. And so all of our new tallies this week. Babysitting Brock is now at a total of 7 for the season. Big Brother Pikachu is at 1. Busted Bots is now at 4. Distracted Pokemon is now at 12. Evolution is now at 3. Friendly Fire is now at 3. Interesting Intro has increased to 14. Jumping Jigglypuff is at 1. Modified Motto is now 4. Off Again is now at 3. Outstanding Outro is also now at 3. Rockin' Reunion has jumped up to 6. And Togepi Trouble is now at 2. And for the rest of the tallies, if you want to see the full list, I will have them on our Facebook page, Routes Through Pokemon, as well as our latest rankings for the season. All right, now we have to award a Pokeball. Which Pokemon stood out in this group of episodes?
There were a few different ones that I was thinking of for it. Let's see, which one do I want to go with?
I've decided on mine, so let me know when you've decided
yours. I feel like the Pokeball could go to a few different Pokemon, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I think we're just going to go with this one because that's what I'm feeling tonight. Wait, actually I changed my mind. Now it's going to this one.
All right, one, two, three.
Wobbuffet. Ah,
yes! With the Wobbubalooza and the imitation confrontation, I just couldn't help it. There was so much, and we learned about more about them.
Yep. The other one that might have been it was Ditto.
That was my other thought, too. But then I think I got to Ditto, and then I'm like, oh, but Ditto was Wobbuffet. And then there was the other Wobbuffet. Oh, no, it's Wobbuffet.
Yeah, I was thinking Ditto, and then I'm like, wait, wasn't there an episode that was really good? And I was like, oh, Wobbapalooza, and then Mini did, and was Mini Wobbuffet? And I'm like, Wobbuffet is Wobbuffet.
I considered Snubbull for a second, too, just because of the whole Granbull evolution.
There were three, and he was one of the three.
Yeah, but Wobbuffet. So Wobbuffet, we agreed again, so he gets a Great Ball. All right, and those are our episodes. So that means it's time for Pokemon Card. Alright, so I am opening my last pack of Scarlet and Violet Twilight Masquerade with the tea ghost Pokemon from, I think, Scarlet and Violet.
So you're probably just going to get, you know, like three evolutions and then a fourth one, but that's going to be like an EX or something, right?
Maybe.
I'm opening Surging Spark Scarlet and Violet with Exeggutor.
Alright.
My first Pokemon is Scatterbug, grass type. It's a cute little Scatterbug. This Pokemon scatters poisonous powder to repel enemies. It will eat different plants depending on where it lives. It scatters poisonous.
Yep, I caught that.
Alright, my next one is Buffalant. I was trying to figure out where its face was. Took me a little bit.
I think it's Buffalant or something.
Buffalant. And colorless type. These Pokemon can crush a car with no more than a headbutt. But Buffalant, with more hair on their heads, hold higher positions within the herd. Then a Phoebus, water type. It is the shabbiest Pokemon of all. It forms schools and lives at the bottom of the rivers that teem with plant life. Oh, Croculaar evolves from Fuecoco.
Ooh.
Fire type. The value in Croculaar's flame sac is a closely connected to its vocal cords. This Pokemon utters a guttural cry as it spews flames every which way. That's kind of fun that, like, they say something about its vocal cords when in, the new show.
Horizons?
Yeah, Horizons. They're Fuecoco sings.
Oh, yep.
Dusk Ball, item trainer card. Look at the bottom seven cards of your deck. You may reveal a Pokemon you find there and put it in your hand. Shuffle the Pokemon cards back in your deck. It's almost like
interesting,
a Great Ball or something. Look at the top seven.
Yeah, a Dusk Ball is the one that's good for catching things in caves or in dark, I think.
So the bottom
I think that's a that's clever.
Yeah. Then I got Armor Rouge, evolves from Charcadet, fire type. This Pokemon clads itself in armor that has been fortified by psychic and fire energy, and it shoots blazing fireballs. Then I got Jasmine's Gaze, supporter trainer card.
Is that the Jasmine? Does she look like the character from the manga?
Probably. Oh, in the background. Yeah, it's a pretty little picture with like a lighthouse in the background. I don't know.
Oh, nice.
Peninsula almost.
And we've heard about a lighthouse in Johto as well.
Did we?
In Ecruteague?
Oh, maybe we did.
Yeah, they talked about something about. I think they said something about a Pokemon being the light or something like that. I don't remember. They said something about the lighthouse.
I wonder if there'll be a connection in the game.
Between Jasmine and Lighthouse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm wondering too. And so she's obviously a character probably from the games and everything then too, because like they made a point of her, like we should have known who she was in the manga, and now there's also this card, so I'm very interested.
I feel like she'll be in there. She's gonna be the next gym leader.
We'll see.
Okay. During your opponent's next turn, all of your Pokemon take 30 less damage from attacks from your opponent's Pokemon after applying weakness and resistance. This includes new Pokemon that come into play. Ooh, mine in my reverse holo is Tandemouse, colorless. The pair sticks together no matter what. They split any food they find exactly in half and then eat it together. Nice. Another reverse holo, Zwellius, evolves from Dano, dark type. The two heads have different likes and dislikes because the heads fight with each other. Zwellius gets stronger without needing to rely on others. I've got two pairs of Pokemon, the two heads and the two Tandemouse. One are always together and share everything. The other one are forced to be together. Then my rare is Tapu Lili, psychic type. As it flutters about, it scatters its strangely glowing scales. Touching them is said to restore good health on the spot. And then I got a grass energy.
All right, my turn. We have Chimchar, fire type. Its fiery rear end is fueled by gas made in its belly. Even rain can't extinguish the fire.
Okay.
Well, that's going to be a lot of the kids' favorite Pokemon. All right, I got Whirlipede, evolves from Venipede, dark type. I like the look of Whirlipede, and especially the shiny one. The shiny Venipede looks like a turd. But the shiny Whirlipede looks so cool.
That's fun.
And there's a final evolution, which I don't think that the shiny of that is all that great. But the shiny Whirlipede, I mean, I think it's fine. It's better than Venipede. But Whirlipede is where it's at. This Pokemon spins itself rapidly and charges into its opponents. Its top speed is just over 60 miles per hour.
Whoa.
I have Crawdunt, water type, evolves from Corphish. A rough customer that wildly flails its giant claws. It is said to be extremely hard to raise. I got Farfetch'd, colorless. Ability, Impromptu Carrier. When you play this Pokemon from your hand onto your bench during your turn, you may search your deck for a Pokemon tool card and attach it to this Pokemon, then shuffle your deck. The stock this Pokemon carries in its wings serves as a sword to cut down opponents. In a dire situation, the stock can also serve as food. Iron Bundle, future Pokemon. It's a Delibird type Pokemon. It's like a robo-Delibird almost.
I think we've gotten a couple of those.
Yeah. Water type. It resembles a mysterious object mentioned in an old book. There are only two reported sightings of this Pokemon. Were they on Christmas? Supporter Trainer Card, Lucian. Each player shuffles their hands and puts it on the bottom of their deck. If either player put any cards on the bottom of their deck in this way, each player flips a coin. If heads, that player draws 6 cards. If tails, they draw 3 cards. Darmanitan evolves from Darumaka, fire type. The thick arms of this hot-blooded Pokemon can deliver punches capable of obliterating a dump truck.
Oh my.
Oh, my first reverse holo is a T-Pokemon. Poltergeist.
Oh, I've seen that one before.
Grass type. Poltergeist looks like a regional form of Sinistee, but it was recently discovered that the two Pokemon are entirely unrelated. And so I think it's like its evolved form that was on the package.
Mm, cool, cool.
My other reverse holo is Laron, evolves from Aeron, which is a steel type or metal type. Laron live in mountains brimming with spring water and iron ore, so these Pokemon often came into conflict with humans in the past.
Oh my.
All right.
I don't even want to hear it. Nope.
So here's the deal. I had learned from a friend, Frank Future, about what could possibly be in Twilight Masquerade. And so that's why I removed the last few packages, so that I could open them. Because it's a Pokemon that I've really wanted to find. And I already wanted to find it before I learned anything else about it. I didn't know what set it was in. It turns out, in my last package, I got it. And I'm so excited.
What is it?
Greninja EX Terra type fighting type Pokemon. Like, I think there's a really special one, like full art or whatever, that's worth a bunch of money, but this is just like a regular card. But still, I wanted this particular Pokemon card. So I'm very excited. So yeah, being an EX, there's nothing to read off of it. And even though it's a fighting type, its moves need water. But it makes its weakness psychic. And yeah, it evolves from Frogadier, of course.
That's really cool that you got it on your last pack.
Right? All right, that is our episode. So yeah, the next episode you'll be getting after this one, it'll be a special with a couple of shorts that we'll be discussing. So get ready for a couple of returns. Then after that, we will have an episode with like 3 chapters of the manga and only 4 episodes of the anime as we finally catch up to the Ecruteak Gym in both manga and anime. So then we'll be able to journey further into the video game world. So yeah, next episode is the special. The episode after that is catching up to the Ghost Gym in Ecruteak in the anime and manga. And then we will be going forth into hopefully the next gym in the game as we work our way through Gold and Silver and Crystal. So with all that said, Routes Through Pokemon is a Hunterfield Institute production. You can find us on YouTube at the Hunterfield Institute channel. We have a playlist for all our Routes Through Pokemon episodes. You can also find us on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and other podcasting platforms. So please like, subscribe, rate, review, leave little comments. We love getting those. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can email us at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook group, Routes Through Pokemon, where I post our latest tallies and rankings, so you can keep up with that. And I also post on Instagram at kinetic_card and on X at hunterfieldins. So find us wherever you want, engage with us wherever you want, and we will catch you on the next route. Bye-bye! Sayonara! Part 24. Washed In. The sea splashed against the docks, and the hull of a large vessel with the name S.S. Anne painted in large letters on the side. The ship rocked a little with the water, and the ramp from the boat to the docks bounced up and down a bit, making those traveling upon it a little unsteady. A man was giving direction to a few Machamp that were carrying stacks of boxes onto the S.S. Anne. More water splashed against the side, and the gray sky rumbled. The first drop of rain splattered against a Machamp's forehead and slid down his face, weaving a trail between his eyes and around his mouth before dripping from his chin. The man called out to his Machamp to pick up the pace as the storm prepared to break. Another wave broke against the boat, and that time there was an added thud as something hard carried in the water also hit. But it went mostly unnoticed, as a crash of thunder coincided with the event, which startled one of the Machamp and caused it to slip and fall backward into another, sending their boxes crashing onto the docks and scattering their contents. The man berated them for their clumsiness and ordered them to start cleaning up the mess of Pokeballs, decorations, and a few awards. So his failure to notice something coming up out of the water onto the docks and slip away was understandable. But someone did see, for he had heard the thud against the boat while he was watching the sea and clouds grow increasingly menacing. And the sound had made him curious, so he ran around the ship looking down into the water for what it was the sea had carried over. His heart pounded when he saw the figure emerge from the depths. There was a flash that could have been lightning, and then the figure lumbered off into Vermilion City. People stared at the shambling figure as it made its way through the streets, dripping a trail of water wherever it went. Nobody seemed to notice the boy following at a distance, his curiosity driving him to push his fear aside. The figure stopped in front of a building, and the doors slid open, permitting access to the interior. The boy was so focused on watching the mystery that he didn't even see what the building was, nor did he see the mailman on a bike coming right at him. The mailman swerved just in time, narrowly avoiding a collision with the kid, but not avoiding a collision with the garbage can that sent him flying from his bike and onto the pavement. Completely oblivious to it all, the boy finished crossing the street and entered the building he had seen the figure disappear into. The boy's eyes darted around rapidly, searching for the figure. It didn't take long since the wet mass was standing in front of a counter and placed a Pokeball down for the nurse to collect. That's when the kid realized he had walked into a Pokemon Center. He stood completely still for a moment, not sure what to do, and curious what would happen next. But then the mass started to turn, and the boy panicked. He started to the left, and then the right, and then, ultimately, went left and sat down onto one of the benches in the lobby. As soon as he landed, he looked up at the ceiling as if it was something magnificent to study. Then the boy heard the approach of heavy boots clunking along the hard floor and making a squelching sort of noise as water squeezed out of them. They came very close to the boy, who was too afraid to even chance a glance lest he give himself away. Then the bench jerked as something dropped onto it hard, and the boy felt little flecks of water splatter against his hand. He could feel the wet creature looming beside him, and suddenly the boy felt an urgent need to use the restroom. He squirmed as he tightened his legs together, absolutely sure that if he tried to leave, the mass would descend upon him like a muck and consume him.
"Young man, if you need, there's a restroom just over there."
The boy looked up and saw that an elderly woman with a kind smile was looking down at him. Her smile faltered slightly as her eyes drifted over toward the mass beside the boy for just a second.
Thank you."
His own eyes glanced over at the creature beside him, but all he caught a glimpse of was a soggy sleeve. Then he jumped up and rushed to the restroom, feeling that he might be safe to do so with the woman standing there. If anything, if the mass moved, it would likely take her before it could get to him. The boy felt a little guilt over that particular thought. Making quick work of his time in the restroom, the boy left without washing his hands, fearing he would lose the soggy monster. Sure enough, all that was left where it had been was a very wet seat. The boy rushed back into the lobby and toward the door, hoping to find which way it went. Unfortunately for him, the floor was a little wet, and the boy's feet were suddenly in the air, and then he was sliding across the ground on his back. That drew the attention of everyone inside, some barely giving a glance before returning to whatever they were doing, while others were amused or concerned.
"Here's your Pokemon, sir. Take good care of it."
The boy lifted his chin so he could see over toward the counter where he had just heard the woman behind it speak. It was all upside down to him from this view, but there was no mistaking the soaking figure that was now stepping closer to where the boy lay. The man placed the single Pokeball on his belt as his feet squished closer. The boots came to a stop near the boy's head, and for the first time the boy saw the monster's face. It showed so little life that it was almost as if the man was wearing some sort of mask, or he was made of stone. His eyes were a dull green, and they looked strangely lost. Not nearly the menacing red glow the boy had expected, and his eyebrows made him look sort of sad.
"All right."
The voice was a bit gruff, and it took a moment for the boy to realize he had been asked a question. The kid tried to give a nod, but it probably looked odd with his mouth hanging open on his head that was tilted so far back it was almost upside down. The towering figure nodded once.
"Be careful."
And then the man's boots thudded and squished as they carried him out the door. Waiting until he heard the door shut, the boy quickly returned to his feet to continue his pursuit. He was going to need to be a lot more careful now that the monster had noticed him. Outside, it didn't take him long to find the soggy man, and soon enough, it became obvious where he was going. The Pokemon Gym. The boy peered through a window and wondered if the man entering knew what kind of Pokemon they used in that gym, because being soaked while walking into Lieutenant Surge's electric gym seemed like a dangerous idea. The boy watched as the man marched up to the barrier that blocked access to the gym leader. He just stood there, quite still, staring through it. From the boy's angle, he couldn't see through the barrier and could only assume Lieutenant Surge was inside. Then a guy with long hair, beat-up jeans, and a vest walked over to where the soggy man stood. He held something charged with electricity, and the boy worried for a moment he was just going to zap the soaked man. But he didn't. Instead, he tried to get the man's attention, and was getting increasingly frustrated. He tossed out a Pokeball, and out emerged a Voltorb. Soggy Man backed up quickly and tossed his own Pokeball into the fray. But the boy couldn't see what Pokemon emerged from that one. Soggy Man was in the way. Getting frustrated, the boy left the window, and decided to just enter the gym himself. As soon as he did, he was being bothered by some guy.
"Yo, champion! Wait, are you even old enough to be a trainer?"
"No, I'm just trying to..."
"Look, you shouldn't be in here if you aren't registered yet. Why don't you head on out now, huh?"
The boy tried to ignore the man and get a look at Soggy Man's battle. But it was too late. Whatever Pokemon he had had already returned, and the long-haired trainer had been defeated.
"Lieutenant," Soggy Man said, "let's battle."
Surge walked over to the barrier, separating him and Soggy Man, and shrugged.
"You need to get in here first. My trainers might offer you some clues if you can beat them."
"I'm here to earn my Thunder Badge."
"As I said, you need to..."
Soggy Man pulled something small, and whatever it was shocked the electric gym leader.
"You already have one? But you just said..."
"Battle me."
The guy at the entrance started to push the boy back since he wasn't listening. He caught a glimpse of what the man held up and, if he wasn't mistaken, it was a Thunder Badge. So why did he need another one? Despite Surge's surprise, he didn't take the barrier down. Instead, he nodded at his other two trainers, and they both started to come after Soggy Man from behind.
"Hey, mister! Watch out!"
And then the boy was thrown out of the gym.
To be continued.